Welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be learning Koheles Perek Dalad, the fourth chapter of Megillas Koheles. Our Perek has 17 psukim, and we're going to look at it in five sections. It's a very powerful Perek, and it's about the human condition and some of the failures of the human condition. Our first section is from psukim Aleph to Gimel, the first three psukim, and it talks about the ill of oppression in society. He talks about the Shavti Ani Ve'Avo'ereh. I look around in society and I see es kol ha'ashukim. I see all those who are oppressed, that's done under the sun. And people are crying out, and there's no one to have mercy on them. How many ills have been perpetrated during history? How many of those ills have ever been brought to justice? How many murders? How many rapes? How many pillaging? How many terrible things have gone on in history? How many enslavements have gone in history, and there's never been justice for them? That's what the Koheles is saying. And therefore, the conclusion he says is that there's really a triage. He says the worst are those who are alive, who are living without justice. The next best are those who are dead, because they are those who are dead, at least their suffering has ended. And then he says, you know what's better than both of those categories? Those who have not yet been born. Because they've not yet suffered. They've not yet gone through suffering, even though the suffering may have ceased, the end at death. Reminds us the Gemara in Eruvin, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, where there's a debate between Hillel and Shammai as to whether it's better for a human being to be born or not. And the Gemara concludes after 2.5 years of voting, they decided that after this debate, ensued in the Beis Medrash, that in fact it was the risks are too high, there's too much suffering. It's a very difficult world to live in. I remember a number of years ago, I watched a movie called The Pursuit of Happiness. And it's about a fellow who's really trying to put everything together in his life, and he comes from a disadvantaged background, and he really is trying hard, and he works so hard, and he's living in a homeless shelter, and his girlfriend leaves him, and he's trying to support his son, and he gets an unpaid internship to be a stockbroker, and at the last minute he gets the job, and it's amazing, and he's successful. I found the movie terribly depressing because he was gifted, he was motivated, he was a good man, he had so many good things, but you know what? He barely made it. And he is the 1% of the 99% of people in society who try hard, don't have the capacity, don't have the abilities, don't see the opportunities, and fail, and live very difficult and very hard and painful lives. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. Life is not easy. And that's there's a lot of oppression which is not taken care of. That's the first section. The second section is Psukim Dalad to Vav, our next three Psukim, in which he talks about the ill of competition. He says, I look around at the world and I see, it's called Kishora Maasek, he kinas ish mere'ehu. He looks at competition, jealousy, envy, and he says, it just doesn't work, material competition, people just would do this for the sake of competition. I've seen so many people, and we've all seen so many people, including ourselves, who will, not about the money, not about necessarily just doing well, but about being better. And how many times people go to court, based in, just because they need to put the other person's head under the mud. Not because of their own success, not because of necessarily the right thing, they just need to be better. Competition, it destroys people. It destroys people. Kinah and Tavan and Kavod are the three things that take a person out of this world, will destroy themselves. And Pasuk Hey is what the competitors say about those who are not competitors. They say, this is the way Rav Mordechai Zer Kavod explains. Haksil chovekes yodov v'ochel es b'sarah. They say, the fools, they don't do anything. They just twiddle their thumbs all day long. They don't. if you're not busy and you're not complaining how busy you are, then obviously you're not leading a very productive life. But the response of those who are not competitive is tov in pasuk vav, tov meloi chaf nachas mi meloi chaf naim amal rusrach. Why do we have to be busy all our lives? Why, when we asked how we are, do we always have to use the currency of busyness and franticness, and I've got too much to do, and you have to prove to the whole world that you're valuable because you're busy? Why can't you just enjoy? Why can't you enjoy being with your family? Why can't you enjoy doing what's good for you in life, even though your job might be a vehicle towards that? That's the debate between those who are competitive and those who are not. Very interesting. I once heard a saying, which is a very, very powerful saying, that I will not spend money I don't have to buy things I do not need to impress people I don't know. Competitiveness is a very, very inborn in the human nature, but it's very important to understand that, to know that it's smoke and mirrors. There's the Gemara in Baba Basra points out that when it comes to ideas of the spiritual nature, then kinas sofrim tarbe chachma. In certain places, if it's about ideas, if it's about teaching Torah, then kinas sofrim, seeing how other people are doing, and that kina, that jealousy, will in fact motivate greater wisdom, will motivate greater growth. We always have to look up, not look down when it comes to seeing our spiritual competition. So a lot of people get mixed up. When it comes to physical competition, they're very, very aware of things, and they look at everybody else in the Joneses. But sometimes you forget to look at the Coenses, meaning look at the spiritual side of things. When it comes to spiritual, people are laid back and they say, I'll be all right. Things will work out when it comes to our spiritual portfolio. It should be the other way around. You should be more competitive when it comes to your spiritual portfolio and a little more lax when it comes to one's physical portfolio. It's interesting that the Maharsha points out that that's only when the kina is about the subject, the idea, rather than the person. It's not about that when it comes to spiritual matters. I have to outdo somebody, but when it comes to spiritual issues, I need to always better myself. That's when it comes to spiritual ideas. We move to the third section of the parak, and this is from Psukim Zion to Ches, the next two Psukim. And this, he talks about the ill of the pursuit of money, and he describes, he says, look, people make so many sacrifices in life. For what? They're going to put away a big bank account. They're going to put away a great trust. What? For who? For their brother, for their son, their inheritors. So they sacrifice so much comfort in life. They sacrifice so much enjoyment and just being part of this world. And they work so hard for what? So that somebody after them can benefit. What, is that worth it? Then he goes into the fourth section, which is Psukim Tes to Yud Beis. In these next four Psukim, the Kohelis describes that the importance of working together, of synergy. He describes that Tovim HaShnayim Min HaEchad, that two are always better than one. Why? In four quadrants. They're more productive. They're all more supportive for each other when they fail. They produce more heat for each other. You know, in the days before, central heating in houses, which most of the world does not have still. You know, people would go to sleep and huddle together. That produced more bodily warmth to keep warm. And also they would be able to defend each other when being attacked. These are the four descriptions he says that are better. And then at the very end he says, V'chuta mashulash, Rabbi Mary, you're not taken. A three-stranded rope will never be broken. What does that mean? What's the ending of the capstone of the section? So the Metzudas points out that if two is good, then three is certainly better. Rashi says, no, maybe there's other ideas over here. Maybe it's three generations. If you have a family that is three generations of sages, three generations of B'nai Torah, B'nai Aliyah, then it's going to be very hard to swing that family off. Could also mean a person who holds all parts of Torah, written Torah, oral Torah, and the ways of this world, Rashi says, Derech Eretz. So a person's involved, has their feet in all the elements of this world, not just cocooned in Mikra, not just cocooned in Mishnah, not just cocooned in Olam HaZeh in the Derech Eretz. A person who's able to straddle all three is a person, Shalabi Meheri, you not take, cannot be cut down easily. The Gemara in Yerushalmi Peah talks about that. It says that it's talking about when a person is able to exercise discretion when it comes to their judgment, a person who's able to withhold themselves three times in a row, it becomes easier there onwards to be able to make those decisions. So that once you've acclimatized, habituated yourself to good actions, it's very hard to go back on that. The Torah Tamim quotes a Medrash which says that this refers to what's the three? Is the man, woman, and the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is part of that relationship to generate progeny, the children for the next generation. So this might be talking about the relationship in the existential loneliness of humankind, that Tovim HaShnayim Min HaEchad, that a man and a woman can find companionship with one another, and Chuta HaMeshulash, when we allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu into that relationship, Lo Bimeheri Yonah Teik. What's the point of the transition? Why were we talking about in the previous three sections about the ills of society? Now we talk about two individuals. So the Ibn Ezra explains that up to now we've been talking about how it's very easy when you're a fool to suffer a lot in life. Foolishness leads to all kinds of things, competition and oppression and all kinds of things. But if you have somebody by your side, if you have a companion, at least that suffering is alleviated, and that's what this section is talking about. The Talmud of Chochma takes it one step deeper, and he says, no, this fourth section, is a transition by saying that ultimately a human being can succeed if they're able to harness and marshal both their body and their soul, their intellect and their bodily or material awareness. When they're able to harness both of those together to converge, then they're able to use their body at the same time as guided by the rider, which is their intellect, to ultimately be involved in this world in a very incredible capacity. That's what's being talked about over here. And finally, we finish the parak. The last and fifth section is Psukim Yud Gimel to Yud Zayin. And this is a mashal about a Yeled Misken V'Chacham and a Melech Zaken V'Ksil. So we have a young child who's who's wise, yet it doesn't have opportunity. He's impoverished, he's imprisoned, and you have a king who's very powerful, but he's a fool, and he's old, but he's a fool. So the Pesukim describe how ultimately the Yeled Miskein is better than the Melech Zaken Uksil. And ultimately the king will be deposed of, and the child will exit his incarceration and be able to take the place of that king. What's this referring to? By the way, just as an interesting note, so Pasuk Yud Zayin, Shmor Raglecha, is actually part of the next Perek, so the Perek division isn't exact over here, it belongs to the next idea from Perek. Hey, what is this section teaching us? Ibn Ezra tells us that this Mashal is saying that we just described the tension between Chachma, wisdom, and Kislus, and foolishness. So now we're going to describe how far does that go. Wisdom is better even if the wisdom comes with impoverished or negotiated or lacking situations, still Chachma is better. Rashi takes it to the next step where he says, no, it's referring to the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov. The Zakein, the Melech Zakein, is the powerful Yetzer Hara, and the Yeled Misken Uksil is the Yetzer HaTov. Why are they given such metaphors? Because a person is born with bodily awareness. A person is born as a child, pulling towards themselves, needing, demanding, with impatience, with ingratitude. That's how a child is born. And slowly we educate maturity to that child, being able to wait, being able to appreciate, being able to do things which are actually not just about the instant and the pleasure right now. And that's when the Yetzer HaTov is introduced, as the Gemara says, at the age of 13 or 12. That's when the Yetzer HaTov is introduced to a boy or a girl. Now, what is interesting about that is that's why the Yetzer HaTov is called this Yeled Misken. But it's a child compared to the powerful vice that the Yetzer Hara has of a person. And the ability in life, or the formation of a human being, is that a maturity enough to exercise, we'll call it delayed gratification, not just when it comes to eating marshmallows, but when it comes to one's whole holistic life, the spiritual endowment that a person has. The Talmud Chochma points out that this is exactly a continuation of the last section. Tovim Hashnayim Min HaEchad, if you want to have the body and the soul together, you need to give the real rider, the real one to control, to be the soul, to be the intellect itself. And he says at the end, he looks whimsically at society, and he says, Ra'isis kol ha'chaim ha'malchim tachas ha'shemesh.